Welcome to the Pixel People Podcast, where we go beyond the quest lines to discover the backstories and motivations of our favorite video game NPCs to better understand them and ourselves. I'm Amelia, also known as Fire Rider, and each episode I'm chatting with a special guest about a character they find particularly interesting. Since we're taking a close look at how these characters impact the story, please be aware that spoilers are likely. I hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to Pixel People. I'm Amelia, aka Fire Rider, and my guest today enjoys streaming, writing, watching anime, and, in his words, being a clown on the internet. Cypherial, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. It is good to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. You've been like itching for this character for quite a while, and
yes.
I attempted to stream the first one and failed spectacularly, technology fail, and then I wound up playing both of them earlier this year while I was sick, and they turned out to be perfect games for thinking deep thoughts and just kind of kicking back and relaxing and recovering and all this. So
definitely, this has definitely been a long time coming.
Yes, so very excited to dig into this, especially like once I actually played and met the character, I was like, oh yeah. So tell me, who are we talking about?
So normally at this point in the show, I would personally introduce the character, but I think it's a good idea to let this character introduce herself.
Yes, and what are they without the Force? Take the greatest Jedi Knight, strip away the Force, and what remains? They rely on it, depend on it more than they know. Watch as one tries to hold a blaster, as they try to hold a lightsaber, and you will see nothing more than a woman, or a man. A child.
Well, hello there, Kreia.
That's right. Today we are talking about Kreia from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic 2, The Sith Lords.
She is named all over the place as like one of the most interesting characters in video games, one of the best villains of all time, one of, you know, she is just like on everybody's top list for fascinating, complex characters.
Definitely. She's actually... Her and Revan are the two characters that pop up the most when you talk about Star Wars video games.
Yeah.
Because they're amazing characters. They're very well written.
Oh, yeah.
Well-rounded.
Oh, yeah.
And honestly, both of them are my favorite characters.
The writing in expanded these universe. Games is... The writing and the voice acting is phenomenal. And it's like they're older games and the graphics really show that they're older, but it's like you don't even like notice it because the voice acting is so superb.
Definitely. I honestly think it was delivered amazingly.
Yeah, definitely. And they deal with like such complex themes too, you know. They're not very long games. I mean, I was able to play both of them in like a, you know, 3-week period or whatever it was. And I'm not, you know, the speediest of gamers or anything like that. I know some people can be like, whatever, I finished it in a day. you know, I really wanted to sit with it, though, because everything that everybody was saying felt so important and so relevant, you know?
Yes, definitely. It's one of those games where, like, the dialogue is the best thing about it. Like, the character writing, the story writing, the voice acting, all of that. I honestly think Kreia is one of the most well-written characters in video games. And that's just my personal opinion.
Oh,
obviously,
yeah.
Obviously, I'm pretty sure that, you know, one of your listeners is going to go, oh, but this character in this obscure game is better. But that's just my personal opinion.
Hey, yeah. And I mean, if I'm not going to say she's the best, she's definitely like in the top 3 or top 5. I mean, her writing, I took her with me the entire, even though we butted heads a lot, and we'll get into that. I took her with me the entire game because I wanted to hear every single thing she had to say.
Yes.
So along those lines, tell everybody kind of how she fits into the overall storyline of this game.
Okay, so I'm actually gonna take this straight off the Wookiepedia real quick. So Kreia in KOTOR 2, She is the first party member that you obtain. She's the first party member that you meet, unless you do the prologue and you meet T3M4, but I digress. she takes the appearance of an old woman. Her face, her eyes are covered. She's sort of like enigmatic when you first meet her. Mm-hmm. But she very quickly becomes like your sort of like mentor character throughout the game, mm-hmm. Throughout most of the game. And it's interesting to me to, if you actually pay attention to her, you can actually see, you know, what's coming before it does. And I mean, you've already said it. She eventually becomes the final villain of the game. Spoilers for like a 20-year-old game at this point.
It's all good.
But essentially, like I said, she is the mentor character. She follows you throughout your adventures. She helps the player character recover their connection to the Force, trying to figure out what happened to them. But she also does have her own goals, her own machinations, which I honestly definitely wanted to delve into, because a little bit of backstory on this one, I played this game when I was like 12. And me and my little 12-year-old mind, obviously I'm going to do, you know, I'm going to play, you know, full light side, full Paragon of the Jedi. And Kreia and I always butted heads. And
that was what happened with me, because that's how I play. That's how I always play. Every single game is I am a goody two-shoes. And holy moly, did I hear about it from her.
Oh, my Lord. I hated her the first time I played this game.
She drove me up a wall
and
sometimes.
I thought it was, maybe she's just a dark side character. Maybe I should just do a playthrough on dark side. Did a dark side playthrough. I got the same exact thing. So that's when I started to realize. That's when I started to realize that there was more to this character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Kreia, as a little bit of a backstory, she is a former Jedi Knight. It is unclear as to her true identity. There's a bit of non-canon, non-confirmed trivia that Chris Avalon, the writer of this game, has responded to.
And for those who are going, gosh, that name sounds familiar, that's original writers of Fallout.
It'd be Fallout, Black Isle Studios, Obsidian.
Because Obsidian did this game. So BioWare did KOTOR 1, and then Obsidian did KOTOR 2, which was fascinating to me. I'm like playing games with some of my favorite studios here.
You have Drew Karpyshyn with BioWare writing KOTOR 1, and then Chris Avalon with
it's
KOTOR
like a
2.
Greatest hits. My God.
It's amazing.
Dream team. Anyway, go on. I just had to nerd out for a second.
No problem. So Kreia is definitely one of those characters. It's very intriguing. She's very odd. And I finally, I sat down and played through the game when I was like an adult, when I was like 19, 20. For reference, I'm almost 26. and I started actually looking at what she said, you know, what she was saying, how she was saying it, what her intention was. And I found out she is almost the epitome of a neutral person.
Yeah.
With the added bonus of being completely selfish.
She is, I mean, in D&D terms, she would be 100% pure, true neutral.
Yeah, I would say so. I think she's a little bit more chaotic neutral, specifically because of her predisposition towards deception and manipulation.
That's true.
Which is a very core part of her character.
Yeah, she spends like the first half of the game just like lying through her teeth to everybody she comes in contact with.
Yes, she does. So there are a couple of themes that I wanted to explore here, the first of which is deception and manipulation.
Awesome.
So Kreia...
Well, I mean, those things aren't awesome, but awesome that we're going to talk about it. I just wanted to clarify that.
So Kreia used to be a Jedi Master and a Jedi Historian in the Jedi Order pre-Mandalorian Wars. She wanted to gain a full understanding of the Force, but she had very controversial approaches. So in her own words, I'm actually paraphrasing this a little bit, but once she found all of the mysteries of the Jedi, once she found all of the, you know, history of the Jedi, she turned to the history of the Sith. And that's because she thought she wanted to gain like a full understanding of the Force. And as anybody versed in any amount of research would understand, you can't exactly have a full understanding while only having one side of the picture.
Right.
So after she was cast out of the Jedi Order for her role in training Revan, which she was actually one of Revan's mentors, she was exiled after that, and she sought out Sith artifacts, Sith holocrons, into the Sith code, the Sith ways of the Force, the dark side of the Force. And she opened herself up to it, but at a very specific planet called Malachor 5, which should be familiar to people who've played this game as, you know, the final location, and also in lore as the last battleground of the Mandalorian Wars. She was just utterly consumed by the dark side of the Force on that planet. And the echoes of the tragedy on that planet, because of what Revan did in the Mandalorian Wars, transformed her into what she would later become known as the Sith Lord Darth Treya.
Yes.
So first we have a Jedi Master who wanted to gain an understanding of the Force when the light side of the Force, when the Jedi artifacts, when the Jedi history failed her, when she was exiled by the Jedi Order, when she was quote unquote betrayed by the Jedi Order, she turned to the dark side of the Force. I don't exactly have to say what happened next, because obviously she was betrayed yet again by the Sith, two Sith Lords that she trained and she taught, Darth Nihilus and Darth Sion, who are the two other big bads in the game. You find you come across Darth Sion very early in the game as you're running away from him on Paragus, and then Darth Nihilus is chasing you throughout, you know, most of the game. So she trained the both of them. They diverged from her goal. So they betrayed her. They stripped her of her Force abilities. And they basically almost killed her.
Yeah.
So again, she was betrayed. I think this event turned her into a very bitter and I don't want to say nihilistic, but definitely a very disillusioned woman.
And also very determined in a lot of ways. Like, she's seen both sides of things now. You know, if you want to consider Jedi and Sith opposites, which I don't know if they necessarily are. They're kind of,
they are, you know, and they aren't. That's an entirely other philosophical discussion.
I know.
It would take like 8 hours to go through.
Have an entire podcast series on that.
There's so much.
It probably exists. I know. And I kind of want to give like a little bit of a disclaimer here too. Like, so I have maybe an average to these days, maybe a slightly below average experience with Star Wars, where, you know, I've seen the movies, I've watched The Mandalorian, I've played these games, but I haven't seen the most recent, you know, series. I haven't seen Book of Boba Fett. I haven't watched any of, you know, the animated content that's been out. I've never read any of the books. So I'm very aware that there are huge swaths of Star Wars lore that I just I don't know about. So I want to say right now, if I say something that sounds really stupid to all you Star Wars fans out there who know this universe better than our own, please forgive me.
We hope you find our ignorance charming.
And feel free to let me know, and I will happily record a retraction if needed, or at least, you know, or you know, just clarifications of things and corrections. I'm totally down to do that, because, you know, I like to be fairly accurate, but, and I'm aware that I probably won't always be. But that said, so without even kind of delving into, you know, the real intricacies of the lore, I think that from the movies and from the games, we can still, you know, they make it very clear that these aren't necessarily, they talk about balance all the time, but I don't know that these two things are necessarily like equal weights on each side of a seesaw. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it is and it isn't. It's a little bit more complicated mm-hmm. than that, but
it's very complicated.
Boil it down to its base. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think, you know, in a lot of ways, on surface level, we're very much given Jedi good, Sith bad. But it's so much more complicated than that.
Yeah.
And the way Kreia leans into that and plays with that is pretty much the theme of the game.
Yes. So when she was betrayed by both of those groups, which is a central theme of mm-hmm. her entire character. I mean, she takes the mantle. The mantle of Darth Kreia.
I was going to say her name is like a play on it. Yeah, it's like I was kind of thinking. It's like, well, you kind of took it as your name. What did you think was going to happen? I mean, she calls herself betrayal. It's definitely
self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess.
Over and over again, it's like, as they do to her, she's gonna go ahead and do to anybody else who, you know, gets in her way, or I don't know, probably looks at her sideways. I mean, honestly, she's just she's gonna do what she's gonna do, and, you know, screw anybody else.
Yep, that's honestly, I think that's the essence of her character, just boiled down to its base, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
So when she was betrayed by both groups, she became disillusioned. She adjusted her philosophy. She grew to like despise the Force, the very existence of the Force, and the influence mm-hmm. it had over both the Jedi and the Sith, where the Jedi become a slave to the will of the Force. The Sith mm-hmm. seek to harness it to make it bow to them and work for them. The Jedi view the Force as this sort of like guiding cosmic entity that shapes their lives, and the Sith view it as a tool, a weapon.
Mm, yeah.
Which she does not like, because she doesn't like both of their she doesn't like both the Jedi or the Sith code, because it relies extensively on the Force. And she takes almost this sort of like Nietzschean approach. I hate mm-hmm. name dropping Nietzsche because it makes me sound like a pretentious. But almost this sort of like Nietzschean approach, in that people, Jedi and Sith, use the Force as like a crutch. Mm-hmm. They're not succeeding under their own power, so they don't deserve to succeed.
Right.
And indeed, I think that sums up her entire philosophy and her motivations. I mean, there's this entire exchange on Nar Shaddaa.
I know exactly which one you're thinking. This is where me and her almost really had it out.
So when you get to the planet Nar Shaddaa, one of the very first people you encounter is a refugee who mm-hmm. asks you if you have, you know, any credits to spare. Now, I'm already pretty sure I know what you did, but can you go ahead and enlighten me?
Oh, of course I gave them some credits.
Okay.
I was drowning in credits. Like, why wouldn't I?
And Kreia took exception to that.
Yeah, she was not a fan.
But she has a valid reason for doing so, in my opinion, because you get a cutscene immediately after detailing what happens to that refugee that you just gave credits to. He obviously, you know, gets marked and robbed by somebody else who sees that he has mm-hmm. money and wants the money. Conversely, if you are playing a Dark Side exile and you tell him to basically get lost before I gut you like a fish, she also despises that because you're being needlessly cruel.
Interesting. And so I wondered how she would react to that. I cannot remember. Was there a neutral option there?
No. And there is a reason for that. It is
interesting.
Okay. It's not so much like a neutral option as it is whatever thing that you, if you want to gain influence with her,
yeah,
you need to actually take the advice that she gives you to heart. Like, you don't necessarily have to agree with it, but there is an option to say, you have a perspective that I do not. Thank you for your wisdom and counsel.
And I gave her that response sometimes, you know, because I would often sit myself with what she said and kind of consider it, like does she have a point here? Does she, you know, is this a way? And I just, most of the time though, I couldn't get behind what she was saying.
In this specific instance, you have to consider the planet that you're on. Nar Shaddaa is basically like the glorified mafia house.
Oh,
because
yeah,
it's run by the Exchange. It's basically, you know, a moon orbiting Nal Hutta, which any deep fan of Star Wars will understand as the birthplace, the homeworld of the Hutts, who are deeply entwined in the criminal underworld of the galaxy. So basically it's a very seedy planet. It's full of, you know, people who aren't really the most morally upstanding individuals. So charity given freely does have adverse effects on the people that it befalls. And in that instance, she is correct, but I also don't agree with her.
Right.
Because, like, if I'm playing light side, you know, as I often do, because that's how I play these games normally, I'm going to help whoever I can.
Right. Right. That's just, when I'm playing, no matter what I'm playing, my goal is always to be helpful and to try to make as many groups happy as I can, unless the group is like specifically bad, you know, is doing bad things, then I don't want to help them. But you know, all of the good and even often some of the morally grayer ones, I want to get that satisfying conclusion, and it's kind of impossible here. But I think that really reflects kind of who I am in general, you know, is I like it when people are happy. You know, that's
honestly
nice.
How I play these games too.
Like, yeah,
I feel like a dickhead whenever I, you know, pick the mean dialogue option. It actually kind of makes me want to cry because I care more about the feelings of these NPCs than anything else.
So often. And that was, and so, you know, Kreia and I kind of struggled with that a bit.
Of course.
There's another scene on Nar Shaddaa when you're helping. There's kind of a whole group of refugees. And
yes, this is actually the next thing that I wanted to say because this is the greatest indicator as to Kreia's entire character. So,
yes.
On Nar Shaddaa, the entire point of the Nar Shaddaa questline is to gain an audience with the Exchange, which is this massive criminal syndicate that's hunting down Jedi. You want to be able to, I forget exactly what it is, but you want to gain an audience with them to be able to use them to I think flush out a Jedi Master so that you can either talk with them or kill him, depending on which playthrough you're doing.
Yeah.
So there's this entire group of refugees, and the Exchange is trying to put pressure on the refugees so that the refugees will, like, give in to the Exchange and basically, like, submit themselves. Mm-hmm. You have two ways to go about this. You can either help the refugees and become an absolute thorn in the side of the Exchange to the point where they have no choice but to confront you, or you can do the easiest, cheapest, and fastest way of making life for these refugees as fucking miserable as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
From a gameplay standpoint, that is the easiest, cheapest, and fastest way, but it's also the dark side way, which I didn't do until my second playthrough.
Yeah, you're essentially selling them into slavery. That's
yes.
what they're asking for.
So I believe there's about 3 or 4 things that you can do in this area, and one of them... Mm-hmm. is you come across this guy who has this, like, terminal and contagious illness. Mm-hmm. He's sitting in a corner. He's like, don't come near me. I might spread this illness. I don't want to spread this illness. You can actually convince him. You can cure him.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can convince him to kill himself.
Yeah.
Which is pretty fucked up.
Just a bit. But yeah.
If you convince him to kill himself... Kreia applauds you, not because she likes the fact that he killed himself, but because of the fact that you manipulated somebody into doing something that has an effect on others.
Yeah.
The entire point of that, if you're going down this route, you want to lower the morale of these of this group of refugees so that they'll basically sell themselves to the Exchange. So you can do that. You can also convince this woman to sell herself into slavery, mm-hmm. To basically be with her daughter, who was also sold into slavery. Mm-hmm. There's 2 other things you can do. One of them is you can convince this guy to go work for this really terrible company called Zerka.
Mm-hmm.
By convincing him that his wife is basically dead and he's never going to see her again. So you might as well just, you know, go work for this company. You'll get off world, blah, 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 blah. Each time she praises you and she says something to the effect, like, you've created an echo in the Force and this will help us further our goal, something to that effect.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the greatest indicators of who Kreia is as a character. She's not overt. She's very under the radar. Deception, manipulation is her bread and butter. She's not the type of person to confront others outright, more so manipulating others into doing what she wants. And you see this throughout the game. She manipulates your companions, mm-hmm. Enemy characters, like, for example, on Onderon, if you choose to kill, I think you have to kill him, but if you kill Colonel Tobin, if you side with the Queen Queen Talia,
mm-hmm.
You have to kill Colonel Tobin, and you basically kill General Vaklu as well. She actually revives Tobin. And right. feeds him false information about there being a bunch of Jedi on Telos, when in fact there's only one.
Yeah.
Which he then takes that information to Darth Nihilus, kicking mm-hmm. off one of the endgame events in the game.
Yeah.
So she's a very manipulative and deceptive woman. And that's one of the themes that I wanted to explore in addition to betrayal, is because I firmly believe that her betrayal at the hands of both the Jedi Order, her Sith triumvirate, you know, her apprentices revolting against her, and her perceived slight at the hands of the Force, both light side and dark side, molded her into this very... deceptive and manipulative, jaded, disillusioned woman who mm-hmm. uses other people for her own ends.
Yeah.
And her entire goal is literally the death of the Force. She despises the Force. She hates it. She hates what, she hates how both the Jedi and the Sith use it extensively as a crutch. So there's a quote that sums up why, like, it, you would think that, oh, she's a Jedi, she's classified as a Jedi Consular in the game. She uses the Force extensively throughout the game, both in gameplay and story-wise. You know, that would make her a hypocrite. But in her words, she uses it as she would a poison, and in the hopes of understanding it, she would learn the way to kill it.
Yeah.
But perhaps these are the excuses of an old woman who has grown to rely on such a thing that she despises. Which is a very interesting quote in and of itself, because it gives you the knowledge that she knows that she's a hypocrite for despising it and yet using it, but she also wants to destroy it.
Yeah.
She also has a myriad of abilities, such as, you know, breath control. She has dark healing. She's a very accomplished Jedi Consular, very, very accomplished, very powerful Force sensitive, as well as a very skilled lightsaber combatant. She's actually very skilled in the combat forms Shicho, Makashi, and Suresu, which you can actually learn in the game. There's a bunch of lightsaber forms and a bunch of Force forms. Interestingly enough, she is actually very proficient in a rare lightsaber technique known as Trakata. This is a fun bit of trivia. If you've ever looked at the movies or the games and you see lightsaber combat and you're just wondering to yourself, why don't these Jedi use the Force to turn people's lightsabers off? That's what Trakata actually is. It's the practice of manipulating the lightsaber's ability to be turned on and off. It's very interesting because it allows practitioners to basically bypass people's defenses, particularly in melee combat. So I think that's a really cool, fun trivia fact.
Yeah, she was, the whole time that I had her with me, I felt she was very OP.
Yeah, she is the entire time. Very, very powerful.
Even as you're like leveling her up and adding new abilities, it's just like she can hold the whole thing on her own pretty much.
Yes.
I'm just there to stand around.
She
get yelled at by her later.
She also has an incredible amount of knowledge on other characters, particularly a character known as Atriss.
Yeah.
You remember her?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, with the handmaidens and everybody.
Yes. So Atriss is actually much in the same... I'm going to diverge from Kreia for a second. Atriss is actually much in the same boat as Kreia. She's a Jedi historian. She basically takes the same path as Kreia. When it comes to Endgame, it's revealed to you that she, her meditation chamber is basically surrounded by, it's filled with like Sith holocrons.
Yeah.
Which at that point you realize she has taken the exact same path as Kreia. And because Kreia, I'm going to give you another bit of in-game trivia. I don't know if this is an actual like intended mechanic or not, but when you first meet Atriss on the Telos Academy, you can actually figure that out yourself because Kreia is technically blind. Her eyes, her actual eyesight has atrophied from disuse. But she actually has an ability called Force Sight, which gameplay wise, if you go into first person view, you can actually see the alignments of certain characters. Certain characters will pop up as blue or red or gray, depending on their alignment. Because Atriss still exists inside the game because of the way cutscenes work, you can actually go up to her meditation chamber, put it in first-person view, and you can actually see Atriss's character model cloaked in red.
Oh, how funny.
I don't know if that's intended or not. I believe it is an unintended glitch, but it's still pretty fun. So that you can like just basically it gives me saying this gives depth to the way that she sees the world. She can see the alignments of others.
Yeah.
Which is definitely very helpful when she, you know, tries to manipulate other people. Throughout the game, she's your mentor character. She tries to mold you in this sort of, like, she takes special interest in the player character because the exile she views as like a wound in the Force. Somebody who has learned to live without the Force out of necessity. Because of what happened on Malachor 5, which the exile was present for, in order to survive, the exile unconsciously cut themselves off from the Force, which would basically mean the death of any normal person.
Yeah.
Which Kreia finds very, very fascinating. And so she takes special interest in you.
So along the way
the game progresses, you gain your knowledge and understanding of the Force back, and you start to see that she is not as she seems. She's not this, you know, old woman, this old mentor character. And by the end of the game, she has basically seen enough. She, when you confront the Jedi Masters on Dantooine, they refuse to see the truth of the matter, which is that basically, like, they refuse to believe, like, what the exile actually was. And so she basically, Kreia reveals herself as both Kreia and Darth Treya, because the Jedi Masters that are on Dantooine recognize her. They believed her to be dead. Basically, right. Because they had stripped her of her rank within the Jedi Order. They had basically exiled her, and to their knowledge, she had just, you know, died, fallen off the face of the galaxy. She reveals herself, and in anger at the Master's decision, she strips them of their Force abilities, of their connection to the Force. Because of the fact that these Jedi Masters have grown to rely so heavily on the Force, they die.
Yeah.
They transfer from the living Force to the cosmic Force, and they basically just die. And it's at that point that Kreia basically abandons the party and reassumes her mantle of Darth Treya. And at that point, which is endgame, she goes back to Malachor 5. She goes back to the Treyas Academy. She wants to reinstate her Sith Triumvirate. Once you get to endgame, you have this nice little conversation with her, and you can actually attempt to turn her back to the light side of the Force.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like redeeming her, but allowing her to accept the fact that, you know, she was wrong. I'm going to say this, and I'm probably going to make a lot of people mad, because this show is basically about, you know, NPCs and how we relate to them, and how this, like, how we as people relate to these characters. I cannot relate to Kreia at all.
I can't
absolutely
either.
Fucking despise her because she is... Her entire worldview, her philosophy, her methodology, everything is the complete antithesis of my own.
I completely agree. I
cannot in any capacity condone her philosophy, her methodology, the way she views other people, particularly non-humans.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know, a space racist, a little bit. But that's an entirely other discussion, because a lot of people in Star Wars are actually kind of space racist. So,
yeah, that's a definite.
But as far as understanding this character, she's definitely very intriguing, and I could go for hours upon hours upon hours detailing like what I believe, what I think of her philosophy, like critically examining her as a character, her entire story arc, her backstory, even. this conversation could go for like several hours.
Oh yeah.
And when I played this game as a 12-year-old, I could not understand any of this. I just thought she was just a massive bitch. I genuinely hated her. But once I started picking up on like subtle nuances in her character, in her dialogue, exactly like what she was trying to impart upon the exile, I kind of get it. I don't condone it, but I understand. She's fallen so far. She has been betrayed by people that she trusted. She has been betrayed by people that she worked with. She's been betrayed by her very ideals. Mm-hmm. The very like thing that she served. At that point, it'd be very difficult to not be jaded and disillusioned and cynical over everything. And honestly, I don't blame her for wanting to kill the Force. I think it's an impossible task, but I don't blame her.
I think that a lot of what she said, the reasons why it was so interesting and why I needed to kind of sit with it a little bit was that there were often elements of truth in it. And, you know, and it was like I had to take that moment to say, okay, well, yes, this is a fact, but... You know what I mean? Like when she berates you for helping people, and her argument is essentially, if you help these people, they're never going to have you just rob them of the opportunity to better themselves and strengthen themselves.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was just kind of like, okay, yes, but still, I want to help them. You know,
on on some level, I agree with her, like her words there. Given the entire, like the circumstances in that, because it's Nar Shaddaa, and because you know you don't want to be flashing that you have, you know, a bunch of credits.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I want to help people. I want people to thrive. Not because they got it under their own power, but because I believe everyone deserves to. And that's my worldview. That's my philosophy. And in real world politics, not to get political on this podcast, because we're talking about NPCs, but like my entire worldview and sociopolitical views are, I just want everyone to thrive. I want everyone to be happy.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, and it's so funny because, you know, at the same time, she would go from saying something. I'm wanting to go like in two different directions. My brain is like split and it's like, okay, let's pick a trail here. Okay. So the one I want to follow is the things that she says that have those elements of truth, they remind me so much of certain politicians who play that game, you know what I mean? And they play it to enact some really repellent policies.
You and I have had conversations about this before. Yes.
Yeah. And that's if without that moment to sit with the idea and say, okay, I see that, but also loving people and helping people is kind of cool too. You know what I mean? Without taking that moment, it's very easy to see how people get suckered into those ideas.
Yes.
You know, especially when the end result is you yourself are going to benefit from that philosophy, you know, because I shouldn't say people, but a lot of people, many people will, you know, choose a side that doesn't actively harm somebody else, but betters themselves, you know, or makes their situation better in some way. We all kind of want that.
I'll just flat out say it. People at large are just absolutely selfish.
Yeah. The last 2 years have proven that to be abundantly clear, how incredibly selfish people are and how very little they will do if it only benefits somebody else.
Of course.
And it's devastating. And it makes Kreia right in a lot of ways, which is ew.
I genuinely believe the best written characters are the ones where even if you don't agree with their methodology or their worldview or their philosophy, you can understand where they're coming from. You don't necessarily condone it.
Oh,
but
yes.
You can understand where they're coming from and why they're doing the things that they do.
Absolutely.
For example, I understand Kreia. I understand her motivations. I don't condone it, but I understand why she is the way that she is.
Right.
For another example, there's an anime called Psycho Pass. The villain in that anime, Makishima Shogo, is basically trying to dismantle a dystopian society. He's not exactly a very morally upstanding gentleman, but his ultimate conclusion is actually correct. He doesn't exactly go about it in the most morally upstanding way, but I can understand where he's coming from. And so those, I think, are the best written characters and the best written villains, is where, regardless of their actions, you can actually understand their like stance on things and where they're coming from and why they're acting the way that they are.
Yeah. And you get a person who wants to manipulate that understanding and that sense of, not sympathy exactly. Sympathy isn't right, but, it's almost like this teensiest bit of connection. You know what I mean? Like you recognize that as another human, and that particular feeling is what is being kind of preyed upon. So, you know, Kreia is very real. She's a very, she doesn't come across as, a lot of times, villains in games or other stories or other media can come across as almost kind of cartoonish or exaggerations or, caricatures, you know, and yes. Kreia is not that. Kreia is something, is the type of person that is absolutely walking around in the world today.
100%. And I chalk that success of writing up to the team at Obsidian and Chris Avellone and even Drew Karpyshyn, who laid the foundation for these types of characters. And honestly, you could say this about all of the characters in KOTOR. Like, some of them are absolutely cartoonish, but most of them are absolutely phenomenal. I mean, this podcast was basically made for these types of characters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you have so many brilliant characters in KOTOR. You have Atten Rand, you have Cartho Nassi, Basil Ashan, Joe Lee Bindo, who is...
Oh, he was the best. And,
one
you know,
of my favorite
Joe Lee
characters.
Bindo is the anti-Kreia.
Yes, 100%.
He straddles that same line of not Sith, not Jedi. Well, I mean, he's Jedi, but, you know, very gray and doesn't...
He's the closest approximation to a gray Jedi that we're ever actually going to get, barring Revan.
Yeah, but he leads with love. And he's so clear about that. And he's so clear that, like, with the Jedi's approach to love, which it appears to have, like, kind of, I think maybe it becomes corrupted and simplified over time, and nobody bothers to kind of examine that. He's like, that's messed up. Like, who wants to live like that? And
yeah, in the first game, Jolie was one of my favorite companion
fantastic.
Characters.
Yeah. It was so great. And it's what he's what Kreia could have been, you know, and I don't mean that like in terms of the character, but if we're thinking of, you know, two humans rather than two, you know, game characters who are driving a plot forward.
Yes.
But that's very much what I see there. And I think that's why when I went into KOTOR 2, not really, you know, not knowing the character, not knowing anything about it, I wanted her to be that. And, you know, initially you think you're being set up to, oh, this is my teacher type of character that you often have. I'm supposed to impress her, you know, and everything I did made her unhappy.
Yes, she's very, very difficult to gain influence with. And the trick to that is to be a manipulative little shit. Basically.
Yeah, which I'm never going to be. You know, and it's so funny because, you know, I mentioned, you know, some of the things she does are very almost subtle with, you know, some truth. But then she'll turn around and be like, what the hell were you thinking? We could have had this awesome alliance if you just sold all these people into slavery. Like, yeah. Duh, no brainer. And I'm like, excuse you? No.
The other thing about Kreia that I despise is she views morality as weakness.
Yes.
I absolutely. I don't like that. I get it, but absolutely. I don't like it.
Whew, yeah. No, not
she's
my jam.
She's the type of character that despises, you know, charity freely given, but yeah. She also despises, like, just abject cruelty and wanton slaughter.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There, there's a thing on Telos, on Citadel Station, where you can just basically massacre this group, and if you do so, she says something to the effect of, "Our psychotic urges all that drive you. You shouldn't have done that. That's not cool, bro." So she's definitely a very well-rounded character, if not very enigmatic.
Yeah, yeah.
She's neither, you know, one or the other. She's definitely somewhere in the middle. And one other little bit of trivia. I don't know if this is completely intended, but in all of my playthroughs, in the character alignment screen, her alignment never changes.
Yes, never. Same. Yeah.
Never. She continually stays gray. She stays neutral.
Yes.
You can, in KOTOR 2, you can affect the alignment of your companions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She never changes.
Yeah, no matter how much. Because I would even, like, you know, as you're controlling, you can, you know, direct what they're going to use. And if you use, you know, light type spells versus dark type spells, you can nudge that and stuff like that. And I even tried to see, you know, if I block her from using dark spells, and spells is probably the wrong word, and there is
force
some
abilities,
there's a,
force powers.
Thank you. I was going to say there is a Star Wars person out there right now screaming
at their car radio.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. I play too many games. I call them spells in Cyberpunk too. I don't know what to tell you. Anyway, I tried to experiment with that just to see, because I did notice that, and nope, doesn't budge. Doesn't budge whatsoever.
There's honestly so much more that we could go into. I could go into, like, a bunch of trivia. I could go into, like, her, like, how the game, like, actually ends, and it's like, its consequences for expanded universe, like all of that. And honestly, I should at some point, like, do some sort of, like, YouTube video or, like, discussion on stream about this character, because she's actually my favorite character in KOTOR 2.
She's fantastic.
Not because I love her, not because, like, oh, she's such a great character, look at her, but because she is such an enigma.
Yeah.
And it definitely requires a lot of, like, outside the box thinking to try to understand her.
I feel like in a lot of ways, communicating with her becomes very much like reading a book by somebody whose philosophy you don't agree with. Like, okay, like Ayn Rand or somebody like that. You know what I mean? Where actually they probably have, those two have a lot in common.
Probably, I was about to say. I was like, Ayn Rand?
Yeah. they Ayn Rand would definitely, like, dig on Kreia. But, you know, you're reading this and kind of chewing through these ideas that are being presented to you. And in my case, you know, I'm feeling repelled by them, and I think it's so important to stop and take a moment and ask yourself, okay, why are these repellent? What is your counter to these ideas? And I think that's always an important thing to do. Is it's part of that kind of understanding the enemy makes it to, like, grr, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just growled. Okay. But I think understanding ideas that are contrary to the ones that you hold, you know, very dear, is important to understand people who fall into those ideas and consider the ways that we can counter them and what would ring true to them and how can they be pulled out of, you know, an idea that may be very harmful to them and others.
Yeah, I think that's a very great takeaway from this.
Yeah, and I think that if you want to do that, fire up KOTOR 2 and have some conversations with Kreia, because she will force you into it. See what I did there? I have been rolling with the puns lately. Oh my okay.
God. Definitely.
I've managed to get one in like every episode lately.
Yeah.
So to our lovely listeners, if you haven't yet played the Knights of the Old Republic games, I mean, you've basically been spoiled on both of them. Because of the previous episode that Mothman's Ranger did, I believe, on Revan.
So he was part of our, it was part of our panel on Transformation and, I think it was Transformation Redemption. And yes, he brought Revan.
Yes.
Who I think, and, you know, at the time that we had that conversation, I hadn't played the games yet. And I want to go back and revisit it.
I'm slightly salty that got spoiled for you, because that's one of the greatest twists in any video game I've played. But
I had actually forgotten by the time I got around to playing it. And okay. It was still like I like
when that happened, started, my jaw just like hit the floor for like a straight 5 minutes. I was like,
yeah,
the ramifications of this are absolutely insane.
I was like, oh.
But to our dear listeners, if you haven't yet played the Knights of the Old Republic games, those two games are some of the best RPGs I've ever played. They're a little dated. The graphics are a little janky. They don't like to play very well on modern PCs.
Yeah, I ran into that problem a bit.
Especially if you get the PC versions. But
yeah,
it is, if you can get it working, it is very much so worth it. If you like BioWare, if you like Obsidian, mm-hmm. if you like anything like Mass Effect or mm-hmm. Dragon Age or mm-hmm. You know, Fallout New Vegas or mm-hmm. the original Fallouts even, go ahead and get these games. They're very cheap on Steam. Get these games mm-hmm. and yeah. fire them up. Have some fun. If you're a massive Star Wars fan, you've probably already played them. Just play them again. It's definitely
especially
an experience
if you played them a long time ago. I think what you said was really important, that the first time you played them, you were like 12. And yeah, as a 12-year-old, that probably would have, this stuff would have gone right over my head, you know?
I missed all of the nuances when I was 12, but I played it again when I was like 19, 20.
Right.
And I was like, holy crap, there's so much I missed.
Yeah, there's some really deep thinking in these games and some amazing, amazing writing. So, yes. I know we could probably talk for like another hour about the complexities of Kreia.
Oh,
but
easily, but we are.
So, but thank you so much. I'm so glad that you introduced me to her. I probably would never have played these games if you hadn't requested her as a character, quite honestly. And
I'm very glad I did.
I am too, because I, you know, I'm like, oh, Star Wars, okay, but I love them. I absolutely loved them. They are definitely some of my favorites now. And you know, for anybody who loves a good story, this is it. So if anybody would like to talk more Kreia with you or any of the other things you got going, where can they find you?
Well, as with most of the people you have on this podcast, you can find me over on the Campfire Discord, it is now called, the Pixel People Discord, Fire Riders Discord. You can also ping me on the Robots Radio Discord. I'm not as active there, but if you ping me, I will come running. You can also follow me on Twitter, @6_sense, CYX_SENSE. It would be Cypherial, but my account got nuked a couple years ago because I said some not very nice things about a certain British author.
Oh, can't imagine who that would be.
Indeed. I'm legally not allowed
deep
to
breaths,
say.
Deep breaths. Okay.
You can also find me on Twitch. I'm trying to stream fairly regularly Monday through Thursday in the evenings, Pacific time. You can also you can find me on Twitch at twitch.tv/sixthsense, same spelling, no underscore. And if you really want to get a hold of me, just put yourself in a dark room in front of a mirror, turn around three times, and just yell Pinocchio at the top of your lungs.
And if you do that, please let me know what your results were, because I'm very curious.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Fire.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun, and it's always fun to talk to you.
You as
well.
Have
a great night.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Pixel People Podcast. Check out the show notes for links to the game and characters discussed, and to connect with me and my guest. Want to be a guest on the show? Reach out to me on Twitter, Twitch, Discord, and just let me know who you'd like to discuss. A huge thank you to my patrons, including my Tier 2 and 3 patrons, Six Sense, Bobblehead, and Aperture Flash. And thank you to Elias Ali and Andy Brooks, who created the theme music. You can follow the show on Twitter at Pixel People Pod and keep up with me on Twitter, Twitch, and Discord. Enjoying the show? Be sure to subscribe. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, I'd love it if you could leave a review. It helps more people find the show. See you next time!